Chapter 66, Martin Luther, Part 1, His Youth. Naughty boy that you are, I shall teach you to be obedient here. Time and again the lashing stick descends down unmercifully. Fearfully, a boy ducks down and tries to make himself as small as possible. However, it is of little use. He cannot escape the painful strokes from the stick. He twists his body in the attempt. However, it is in vain. With a red face, the teacher walks to the front again, while muttering to himself about that troublesome youth. With a distorted face and moaning, Martin rubs the spots where the lashing stick has struck him. His entire body is sore. A few tears burn in his eyes, but he presses the lips tightly together. He does not want to cry. He would be ashamed of that. This is already the 15th time in one and the same morning that he has been flogged by his teacher. Ah, the times then were still so rude. The lesson is continued. History does not tell us whether Martin has still paid attention that morning in school. It would really be no wonder if he no longer had heard anything of that which was discussed. That Martin seemed to have been quite a mischievous boy, that he received a flogging 15 times in one morning. We ought to try that once today. Was he then such a nuisance? Ah, he was a happy, cheerful chap, who could be headstrong at times. Has that aroused the rage of his teacher, perhaps? For that matter, Martin was accustomed to being beaten with a stick. His father, Hans Luther, could also punish him unmercifully for the least offense, because Luther's father was exceptionally strict in the bringing up of his children. He was really too strict. Also, his mother has beaten her Martin for a small offense so badly that he bled. No, Martin was not treated very gently, and least of all, he was no spoiled boy. On the contrary, he has had no happy, carefree young days. At the least offense, he trembled for the consequences. When he heard the name Christ, then he turned pale of terror. Because if his parents and teacher were so strict, how strict must Christ then be? To him, Christ was a very strict judge, who was angry at him because of his sins. When Martin thought about death, then his entire body trembled, because dying signified meeting God, and if that happened, then it would not be well with him. He was fully convinced of that. Martin Luther was born on the 10th of November, 1483, in the little German town of Eisleben. That place is situated in the center of Germany, in the province of Saxony, to the north of the city of Leipzig. We have already told you his father's name was Hans Luther. His mother's name was Margaret Lindemann. His father descended from an old farmer's family, while his mother was more of the middle class. When Martin was born, they were very poor. His father was a miner and earned only a scanty wage. However, a half year after the birth of Martin, and they moved to Mansfeld, a small city in the neighborhood, and then it went better, yea, they even became more prosperous. At the age of 7, Martin was allowed to go to school. Nowadays, all children must go to school, but in those days, must was out of the question. Most of the boys and girls never went to school, and could neither read nor write. For that reason, I wrote, Martin was allowed to go to school. Although they did not learn much, at least they learned to read and to write. In addition, they had to learn the Ten Commandments, the Articles of Faith, the Our Father, and some other things. Martin Luther had received a bright mind from the Lord. For that reason, his father had him take up advanced studies. First, he went to a school at Magdeburg. He was there only 1 year. Afterward, he was enrolled as a student in a school at Eisenach. This city was also situated in the neighborhood of his birthplace. In those days, the life of young students was not easy. They did not receive board money. They just had to see for themselves how they could make a living. Martin Luther also had to maintain himself at Eisenach. Not that his father could not pay it, because I just told you that his parents were fairly well off. But Hans Luther thought that for the development of his son, it was better and necessary to give him a hard upbringing. A youth of privation would later also enable him to better struggle through the difficulties of life. For that reason, after school, Martin and his companions walked through the streets of Eisenach while singing and begging, and in that way they had to earn their bread. And where did they sleep then? Ah, upstairs, on the attic of the school, were a few bundles of straw, and were spread out, and that was their bed. No, in those days the students were not spoiled. Martin was a lover of song and music. Besides, he had a nice voice. On Sunday he went faithfully to church. Relatives of his mother also lived in Eisenach, but they did not take him into their home, so that Martin had to sleep in the school attic in the midst of his companions. You can realize that not much came of quiet studying on that dark school attic. But what happened? One time during a vacation, Luther did not go home but remained in Eisenach while his companions went homeward. He wanted to utilize that time to work hard and undisturbed. He studied hard the entire day. Toward evening, he set out to obtain some food to the end that he need not go to the school attic with an empty stomach. Some writers tell us very touchingly that after he collected nothing, he at last burst out sobbing, and out of pity was invited into the house by a kind lady, Ursula Cotta by name. This story is very nice, but whether it is all true, I would not dare say. It is true that he found a kind shelter in the home of the merchant Conrad Cotta. Mrs. Cotta had often seen him in church, listening respectfully, and that had drawn her toward him. However that may be, Luther obtained an excellent boarding house there. From now on, he need no longer sleep in that dark school attic in the midst of his noisy companions. Now he could study quietly in the home of that merchant. In this we clearly see the providential hand of the Lord over Martin, who had destined him for something great. He spent 3 years in that kind home, but an end came to that, since in order to be able to study further, he had to go to the city of Erfurt, where a university was situated. Thus he leaves Eisenach, although reluctantly, and goes to Erfurt. However, he has never forgotten his friends at Eisenach, but he remained faithful to them for all they had done for him till the day of their death. In the year 1501, Luther was enrolled as student at the university at Erfurt. His father, who had now become an honorable citizen and was even a member of the Mansfeld Council, was proud of his smart boy. He determined that Martin should study law. We would say he had to study to be a lawyer. Luther was a happy, cheerful student, but with conscientiousness and great zeal, he applied himself to his studies. Not once did he neglect his lessons. For that reason, he made excellent progress, to the great delight of his father, who dreamed of a wonderful future for his son Martin. He thought, "It is going fine, it is going fine. If Martin continued like this, then the world lay open to him, and he could become an honored and a distinguished person." That flattered his pride. In the meantime, Martin lived his life as student. He could get along fine with his companions because they all liked him, and many merry evenings were spent together. And yet, deep down in his soul, gnawed a strange unrest. It is true, when they were together, then he forgot that oppressive feeling for a while, but it constantly returned. It was irresistible. The fear of God caused him to tremble. The fear of death, which sooner or later would irrevocably come, often galled his joy of life. He tried to forget it, but was not successful in that. As student, he also had access to the library which belonged to the university. Nowadays, the students may take the books home to read them quietly there. However, in those days, that was not permitted. Those works were too costly for that. The room which had been fitted up as a library was full of benches. Every book was fastened with a chain to the desk of the bench. The students could read and study there as much as they wished, but they were not allowed to take those educational books with them. Martin spent many hours there because he liked to study and search. One day, while he was there again browsing about, his attention was drawn to a thick book which was pushed aside in a corner, buried under a layer of dust. Inquisitively, he opens it and read, "The History of Hannah and the Youthful Samuel." That nice, simple story touched him. There he had found a complete Latin Bible. When he finally closed that Bible, he resolved to read more in it. When he had only a moment to spare, we could find him there in that corner. His eyes eagerly devoured one chapter after another, and since he had a bright mind, he understood that which he read. Through the regular reading of God's Word, he discovered many things which did not agree with that which the Roman Catholic Church taught. He also reflected deeply upon that, and many questions arose in his soul, questions to which he could give no answer. Thus, outwardly, nothing could be seen on him, while nevertheless, inwardly, a heavy conflict was being fought. Often he saw himself placed before riddles which he could not unravel. In that way, several years fly by. Years of sociability and cheerfulness with his friends, years of strife and doubt, of fear and terror when he was in solitude. During the long nights, he lies tossing about on his bed. It is a mild, warm summer day in June 1505. The wind has died down and an oppressed calm hangs over the fields. Hazy, copper-colored thunder clouds tower high up. Beneath that, a threatening, heavy sky. In the distance, the thunder rumbles already, unrolling itself long under the anxiously waiting surroundings. Through a large stretch of woods in the neighborhood of Erfurt, a young man hurries on with great hasty steps. The perspiration stands in beads on his brow, because beneath the thick roof of foliage and between the many tree trunks, the sweltering heat is still more intense, more unbearable than in the open field. That young man is Martin Luther. He has spent a few days of vacation at the parental home at Mansfeld. Now he is returning to Erfurt, where his studies await him. He is making nice progress and longs for the end of the journey because it is so fatiguingly hot. Suddenly, a dull, far distant rumbling draws his attention. Although the trees obstruct his view, Martin realizes immediately that a thunder shower is on the way. The signs of nature also clearly point to that. The cheerful singing of the birds has been silenced. A threatening, oppressive, unnatural quiet prevails. Although the heat is a hindrance to him, yet he hastens his steps, hoping that before the breaking of the approaching storm, he shall be able to reach the nearest village, where he shall find a place of shelter against the powers of nature. The ever closer, ever faster succeeding thunderclaps roll through the sky. The shower is coming up fast. A gust of wind howls through the tops of the trees. Martin, who anxiously hastens on, is overtaken by that shower before he has reached the village. It becomes stormy weather. Lightning flash after lightning flash cleaves that pitch-black sky, and the thunder rattles at the same time at various places. Large, lukewarm drops of rain come down. A flash of lightning, immediately followed by a rattling crash of thunder, causes him to run still faster. Not a living soul is to be seen. No one risks himself outside in this stormy weather. He is alone. A paralyzing fear overmasters him. Oh, what if he has to die now? What then? He cannot meet God, that righteous but severe judge. Gasping for breath, he runs faster, faster, faster. Suddenly, a sharp flash of lightning lights everything with a blue glow. At the same time, there is one single peal. The lightning strikes right next to him into the earth. Through the violent air pressure, he falls to the ground. The fear of death shines from his wide-open eyes. His trembling lips mutter, "Help me, Saint Anna! I shall become a monk." And in great need of his soul, he wrings his hands. Again a lightning flash, followed by a heavy, rumbling crash at a further distance, which reverberates for a long time far into the wide distance. The shower moves on, although the rain still splashes down. That also finally becomes less and stops. While trembling over his entire body and wet to the skin, Luther rises, continues on his way, and without mishap reaches Erfurt. Nature has been refreshed wonderfully. The multitude of birds jubilate loudly its praise of the great Creator. However, all that hardly impresses Martin Luther. In his great distress, he has made a vow, and that vow is sacred to him. He shall perform that vow too. But what shall his father say about that decision which he has made while in distress? he surely will not approve of his step. However, Martin feels himself bound by his word. Involuntarily, his thoughts wander back to some time ago, when upon a merry evening one of his friends was suddenly killed during a scuffle. Again, in his thoughts he sees that lifeless body lie there. Again, the great fear of that moment wells up in him. Suppose he had lain there, what then? Suppose he had been cut down by the lightning, what then? Martin knows very well what his portion would be. He shudders. Oh, perhaps he shall find the peace and rest for which his troubled soul seeks within the restful, quiet walls of the monastery. Conscientiously and punctually, he shall perform his duties, and then, yea, then perhaps it shall become more quiet within. For that reason, his decision stands irrevocably firm. He will go to the monastery, regardless of what his father may say or think about it. Nothing or no one is going to keep him from that. That continual gnawing unrest in his soul is really the chief cause of his decision. This thunder shower was the nearest inducement. He shall find in the monastery that which he pursues. Yet a few days he spends in the midst of his friends. Then he tells them his decision. These stare at him in the greatest surprise. They first think he is joking, but when they perceive that their friend and study companion is in dead earnest, then they try to change his mind. They try to convince him that he sacrifices everything, his youth, his future, everything. However, all their attempts are in vain. The following morning, on the 15th of July, 1505, a few friends see him off. They see how he lets the knocker fall upon the heavy gate of the Augustinian convent, because Martin has chosen just that monastery because the monks there are bound to strict rules. A strict discipline prevails in that monastery, which by far cannot be said of all monasteries. While shaking their head, they look after him with tears in their eyes. In the meantime, the gate has been opened from the inside. Martin Luther enters. Yet one more wave with the arm to his friends. Then the oaken door slams shut behind him. Silently and under a deep impression, his friends return home. They are sorry, but yet they dare not mock about it. Martin Luther has withdrawn himself from society. But in God's counsel, it had been determined otherwise because